20,000 people gathered in Edinburgh to watch an innocent woman burn. Euphane McCauzean's screams satisfied a crowd convinced that justice was being served, that evil was being purged from their midst. 3 centuries later, in a modest Maryland home, a 13-year-old boy spoke languages he'd never learned, while scratches appeared on his skin as if carved by invisible hands. Between these two moments lies a story most Americans have never heard, how the terror of witchcraft accusations forged the very freedoms we take for granted today. The distance between Salem's gallows and our constitutional protections is shorter than we imagine, and the journey reveals something profound about who we are as a nation. The Mayflower's 102 passengers didn't flee persecution, they imported it. Governor Bradford confiscated equipment from strangers playing games on Christmas 1620. The Puritans rejected Christmas, mandated twice weekly 3-hour services, and punished moral infractions publicly. When Reverend John Lyford called them intolerant, Bradford humiliated and expelled him. Dissent meant exile. This pattern spread across New England. John Winthrop's City on a Hill merged church and state into theocracy. Only Roger Williams, banished for radical ideas, established separation of church and state in Rhode Island. Everywhere else, religious law governed life. The persecutors became persecutors. By 1692, Salem was a powder keg. Indian attacks threatened. Poor harvests meant hunger. Property disputes divided families. Religious extremism hung over everything. Any misfortune signaled divine punishment or demonic interference. Cotton Mather's 1689 book detailed Anne Glover's hanging for failing to recite the Lord's Prayer in English. When Betty Paris and Abigail Williams began convulsing in February, Salem knew what to blame. Reverend John Hale declared, "The hand of Satan is in them," and the girls named Tituba, a Barbados slave whose foreign spiritual practices unsettled Puritan sensibilities. Tituba's confession changed everything. She claimed the devil had visited her, that she'd flown through the air, that 9 witches operated in Salem. Her testimony confirmed what terrified colonists believed. Evil walked among them, wearing familiar faces. Salem's devastation stemmed from the court's acceptance of spectral evidence, the claim that a witch's spirit had appeared to an accuser. This made accusation tantamount to guilt. How could you prove your spirit hadn't visited someone in their dreams? Denial meant wickedness. Confession temporarily saved your life, but condemned others. Within months, 19 people hanged and dozens more rotted in prison. Thomas Putnam walked through Salem carrying depositions from his afflicted daughter Anne, and people avoided him. Though holding no official position, this bitter farmer wielded immense power. He personally accused 43 people, with 12 executed and 2 dying in prison. His weapon? 4 young girls who discovered their words could condemn adults to death. Anne Putnam testified against 62 witches, more than anyone else. Cotton Mather championed them, convincing New England these children spoke divine truth. Bridget Bishop was everything Salem's Puritans despised: outrageous, thrice married, and unapologetically herself. When 4 girls claimed her specter attacked them, accusers screeched and contorted at her glance. After 6 weeks in jail, she was hanged on June 10, 1692, the first execution, but far from the last. Even more chilling was Rebecca Nurse's case. At 71, this frail, respected church member had lived in Salem nearly 50 years, but her husband opposed Reverend Paris and had property disputes with the Putnam family, whose daughter Anne became Rebecca's accuser. Despite 31 character witnesses and an initial not guilty verdict, Judge Stoughton pressured the jury to reconsider. When Rebecca, hard of hearing, failed to answer a question, they changed their verdict. On July 19th, she was hanged alongside Sarah Good, who cursed Reverend Noyes from the gallows. "I am no more a witch than you are a wizard, and if you take away my life, God will give you blood to drink." Most heartbreaking was 4-year-old Dorothy Good, imprisoned with her mother Sarah. After 9 months chained in prison, she was released permanently insane. The end came when Governor William Phipps discovered his wife accused of witchcraft. He suspended witch arrests, released prisoners, and established a new court that prohibited spectral evidence. The girl's power evaporated overnight. Salem's aftermath reshaped American thought. Young Benjamin Franklin, working in his brother's print shop, created the pseudonym Silence Doggood to mock Cotton Mather, the minister who championed the witch trials. When his brother was jailed for provocative content, 17-year-old Ben fled Boston for Philadelphia, finding a place of religious tolerance where he could rise from the poverty and obscurity from which I was born and bred. By 1787, religious freedom remained contentious at the Constitutional Convention. James Madison, who'd studied the Salem trials intensely, understood the dangers of governmental oppression. When Patrick Henry proposed making Christianity Virginia's official religion, Madison, Jefferson, and Franklin strongly opposed it. On the convention's final day, Franklin delivered closing remarks, noting how religious sects believe themselves infallible. He implored delegates to doubt a little of his own infallibility and sign the document. The First Amendment's guarantee that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof directly addressed lessons learned from Salem. On January 15, 1949, 13-year-old Ronald Hunkler heard scratching beneath his bed. After his eccentric Aunt Tilly, who'd taught him to use Ouija boards, died suddenly, Ronald's troubles escalated. Furniture shook. His desk moved at school. When Protestant minister Luther Miles Schultz witnessed Ronald's bed violently vibrating and the boy sliding across the floor while bleeding, he told the family, "You have to see a Catholic priest." Father Edward Albert Hughes visited the home, where Ronald spoke perfect Latin and identified himself as the devil. Bloody scratches formed on his chest, spelling hell. After the family relocated to St. Louis, Father William Bodern began formal exorcism rites. For 31 days, Ronald manifested disturbing symptoms, scratches across his body, images of the devil on his leg, violent thrashing requiring multiple priests to restrain him. On Easter morning, a commanding voice declared, "Satan, I am St. Michael, and I command you to leave this body now." After violent thrashing, Ronald became calm, describing a vision of a man in white with a fiery sword. 22 years later, Georgetown student William Peter Blatty transformed this story into The Exorcist. The film's production was plagued by bizarre occurrences. 9 crew members died, a mysterious fire destroyed the set, except the exorcism bedroom. Ronald lived quietly as a NASA scientist. On May 10, 2020, as he lay dying at age 84, a Catholic priest inexplicably appeared at his door without being called. The priest performed last rites, which Ronald peacefully accepted, and shortly after, he passed away. Today, Salem markets itself as Witch City, attracting over 1 million tourists annually who contribute $100 million to the local economy. America's darkest moment of religious persecution has become a Halloween destination, revealing how we constantly renegotiate our relationship with the past, extracting meaning from tragedy. The journey from Salem's gallows to constitutional protections wasn't inevitable. It required Franklin, Madison, and Jefferson to study history's mistakes and insist on something better. They understood that freedom of conscience protected both religious minorities and religion itself from government corruption. Ronald Hunkler's story, separated from Salem by 3 centuries, reveals how far we've come. Both events generated mass hysteria and unfalsifiable accusations. Yet Salem executed 19 people based on spectral evidence, while modern America treated Hunkler's case as a medical and spiritual challenge, not a capital crime. Salem's lessons remain urgent. Resist scapegoating. Insist on evidence. Remember that liberty requires vigilance. The Founding Fathers built protections into our Constitution's foundation. Those protections only work if we defend them, especially when fear tempts us to abandon them.